no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday for another 60 minutes of radio drama. We'll begin the show this week with Frontier Gentleman and the Catman, his story from August 10th, 1958. After that, it's The Whistler and The Little Things, his story from January 14th, 1951.
I left Cheyenne without my luggage, and in company with a wild Irishman and his even wilder cargo of freight.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. In just a moment, we will bring you the latest report from the Frontier Gentleman. Whether your marriage license is brand new or your wedding ring is worn thin over the years, you'll get a kick out of every lighthearted episode of CBS Radio's The Couple Next Door. Written by Peg Lynch, creator of Ethel and Albert, The Couple Next Door is a warm and humorous series about a young married couple. Just for the fun of it, join us on most of these same stations 5 days a week as Peg Lynch and Alan Bunn star as CBS Radio's The Couple Next Door. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
Cheyenne, Wyoming Territory, had been good to me. And when I decided to leave, I informed the people at my hotel, packed my little bag of belongings, and dropped by Carrie Chase's office to thank him for his kindnesses. From there, I went to the stage station and made arrangements for my departure. Having several hours' wait, I took a last turn around the town. I thought I had visited all of the saloons in search of people and stories from my column in the London Times. I was wrong. I had missed Dan's Bloody Bucket, a scant 4 blocks from the center of town. I shall never forget Dan, nor his bloody bucket.
Oh, so you want to play dirty, do you? All right then, Mr. Dan.
The man shouting was small, wearing a derby hat pulled low over shaggy eyebrows. He was holding a gigantic cat in his left arm, while with his right hand he was tugging a length of chain from beneath the folds of a swallowtail coat. He was facing a great brute of a man who was waving a broken whiskey bottle at him. Behind him, out of sight, another man was approaching with pistol butt raised. The odds against the little man were more than I could stand. Look out behind you!
Oh, dear, save us! A saint has arrived. Oh, no, you don't, blighter.
Hey, you want to get in this, stranger?
The troops has arrived, you shilly-shally mucky-buck.
Man seems to need a friend.
You better move on, or what's going to happen to him will happen to you.
Oh, the devil, the cat, the princess, she's jumped out of my arms. Grab her, saint.
No, you won't.
Oh, no, you shouldn't have done that.
Grab him, Chief. Grab the stranger.
I'll get him. Oh, I'll get him right now.
Ah, oh, you've done it, Saint. You've done it. Now grab the cat. I'll swing me chain over these two. Grab her.
What?
The princess, the cat, grab her, lad.
Who? What?
She's going by, Clapperhead.
Oh, yes. Here you go, princess.
Ah!
She's not friendly.
Well, grab her.
All right. Ah! Here now, cat princess.
Throttle her now and make friends later.
Stop it. I've got her.
Now let's get out of here. They're beginning to come around. Run.
Where should we run?
Out the door to me wagon. They won't never come near me chain. Now watch the cat. Don't let her get away. Now run. It's straight on with you. Now the cat. The cat into the box. Hurry.
There you go, lovey.
Hey, you, come on, you high-roaring hop-tail. Hey, you.
It's Dan. He's shooting.
It's never again you'll see me down at the bloody bucket. Never. And the same to all of you. Son of corruption.
Six times a week, here at the Star's Address, you'll find that the shortest distance between two smiles is the Amos and Andy Music Hall. For one thing, there's always a sparkling tune or two to give your spirits a lift. The guest list reads like a textbook in applied astronomy. And, of course, right at the heart of all the lighthearted things that happen at the Music Hall are the one and only two, Amos and Andy. Tomorrow and every Monday through Saturday, on most of these same stations, listen for the Amos and Andy Music Hall.
The little man drove at a most fantastic rate of speed. I sat in silence atop the wagon seat, holding my hat down with one hand, while the other clutched the side for support. Our exit was punctuated by the princess hurling herself at my bottom side in magnificent rages, and I was thankful for the barrier of wood between us. In the bed of the wagon were numerous large crates full of cats of all sizes and colors. There seemed to be no one in pursuit, and after some minutes, the little man slowed the wagon, and without looking at me, he painfully lit a pipe. I presumed we were now somewhere in the barren area between Wyoming Territory and the Dakotas.
Perils. Perils of the trade, my boy.
I would say.
You've done a grand thing, lad. The princess there is the start of a whole new race, she is. I had to have her.
What? You mean the princess belonged to Dan?
And what did you think, huh?
Then I help you steal the cat?
Oh, tush, tush. You merely laid down a blow he'll not be forgetting.
But you said grab the cat. I thought she belonged to you.
Don't let the technicalities bother you. Tis a proper thing you've done.
I don't understand.
I supplied Cheyenne with her cats in the first place, and I reserve the right to have access, as it were, to their progeny.
I see. And if Dan pursues us, then what?
Well, if me luck holds, he won't find us.
And if it doesn't?
Never bother trouble me, lad. Look at me, lad.
Yes?
You have a bit of England in you.
Why, yes, as a matter of fact.
Me worst fears. What did you say your name was?
I didn't. It's Kendall. J.B. Kendall.
And I thought the saints had smiled. My name is Kerrigan, Shane Kerrigan. And you might as well have it straight out. I'm an Irishman. What's your business, Kendall?
I write stories concerning the West for the London Times.
Oh, that is a good town, London. I was there once when I was a mere boy. Good town. Too bad it's so full of the English.
Mr. Kerrigan, I'd be indebted to you if you'd tell me something about yourself for my readers.
Oh, wait a minute. Will you stop your blather, pussycats? It was on a bright summer morning, when the birds sweetly sang on each bough, that I first saw me Kathleen Mavornian, as she sat a-milking her cow.
There. It's a miracle.
Now, Kendall, what was it you wanted to know about?
Yes, this cat business of yours. I was going to ask, how does it work?
Oh, very simple. I'm on my way to save Deadwood at this time.
Save Deadwood?
I have 62 cats, 62 furry creatures in the proper positions, and the town will be rid of its varmints in a matter of hours.
And you intend to sell your cats?
That I do, at $10 a head.
People pay $10 for them?
Now, where have you been, Mr. Kendall? Do you not know that civilization rises or falls according to the number of cats in the towns and villages?
But I just never thought of it.
The great plague in Europe was due to the shortage of cats.
I suppose you're right.
Of course I'm right.
Well, when you get to Deadwood, just how do you plan to go about the sale of your cats?
I have a staunch friend there, dear Margaret. I shall make me headquarters with this lovely lady, and soon the word will spread that I have arrived with my cats.
And will this lady appreciate your coming in with all this baggage?
It'll take a bit of doing, me boy, I don't deny that. But Miss Margaret has had an eye for Shane Kerrigan these many years. Before 'tis done, she'll embrace me and me cats.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather like to ride along, if you don't mind.
Oh, 'tis welcome you are. Hey up there, little one. You've rested long enough. Here.
Your horse. She seems to love her work.
That she does. Oh, 'twas on a bright summer morning. Oh, and the birds sweetly sang in each bough that I first saw me Kathleen. That'll be Dan, the tenacious one. Hiya, girl, hiya! We'll give him a run for his dust.
I turned in my seat, and sure enough, it was Dan on horseback, accompanied by another rider. Mr. Kerrigan clamped his jaw on his pipe, leaned forward, and the wagon flew across the rocky ground.
Is he there, Kendall? Can you still see the heathen?
Yes! He's closer! Jane! You might as well stop!
Stop! Are you daft? I wouldn't stop with the devil himself! Get along there! Hey up!
Then it happened. A rock, half as big as the horse, loomed up in the road. Jane Kerrigan couldn't miss it.
Look out! We're going to hit!
Did you ever see so many cats in the air at one time?
There's only one cat I'm looking for.
Oh, me heart. I've had it this time. Me heart can't take no more.
Are you... Are you all right, Mr. Kerrigan?
No, I'm dead and dying. The wagon's across me leg.
I came for my cat, you old goat. Where is she?
Kendall, how's me horse and cat?
The horse... Horse is all right, but the crates have broken and the cats are scattering.
Are you listening to me? I want that cat. She was the best mouser in Cheyenne.
Now, you see here. See here, Dan, whatever your name is.
Oh.
Can't you see this old gentleman is hurt? Now, give me a hand. We'll get the wagon off him.
You ought to do it, Dan. Your cat ain't worth killing, the old fella.
I ain't helping nothing. It's a cat I come for, and I'm going
to
get.
And I say you're going to help me. Here.
No, no, Kendall. Let him go. It's me dying wish he'd take the cat. Dan! Dan, you can see they've all scattered to the winds. Find yours and take her.
I'm going to do just that. Come on, Jake. Let's find her before she gets lost.
Wait. I'll need help moving this man.
No, 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 no. Are you daft? What about the princess?
Well, the wagon box is still closed.
Oh, good, good.
What about you?
Well, the kind of help I need the likes of them can't give. Now, come on, give me a hand here.
All right, I'll try. Now, when I lift it... You try to pull yourself out.
Oh, yes, yes.
Now, how you doing?
Oh,
howdy up there.
Oh, Kendall, she's bent. Oh, my leg is bad.
Yeah, let me help you.
Oh, may I be forgiven, an Englishman keeping me. It is more important to get the cats back. Now, break out the tripe and liver. They can smell it for miles. Then whilst they're coming in, we can make our repairs and be off for Deadwood.
Whatever happened to, what's his name? You know who I mean. That hypertense newsman who reported every wild rumor he ever heard. Now, we don't know what happened to him, but we can tell you that reliable newsmen like Larry Lesueur, Lowell Thomas, and all of their colleagues at CBS News are still very much preferred by listeners everywhere. 5 nights a week, Larry Lesueur and Lowell Thomas broadcast the news on most of these same stations. Interestingly enough, their consistently accurate and carefully detailed reports provide much more excitement than cheap sensationalism ever could.
It was true. The tripe and liver could be smelled upwind, downwind, probably in Deadwood itself. The cats came streaming in. And with each group, I expected to see Dan and his friend, but we had seen the last of them. Mr. Kerrigan was considerably lamed by the accident, but managed to move about amazingly well. I made all the necessary repairs to the wagon and the crates, and by morning we were underway. We finally arrived at Deadwood, which had the look of all boom towns, a long, narrow street with wooden frame structures along the sides. The dwelling of Miss Margaret turned out to be a large saloon with upstairs lodging quarters. It was called simply Maggie's Place. You're certain this is it, Mr. Kerrigan?
Oh, Aye, this is it. You go tell Miss Margaret. Jane Kerrigan is sick and wounded. Needs lodging.
All right.
Lively with you now.
Hi, oldie, mister. Can I help you?
Why, yes, I believe you can.
I think I'd like to. My name's Charlene. Have I seen you here before?
No, I don't believe so. I'm looking for Miss Margaret.
Miss Margaret? Sure you are. Hey, Maggie.
Yeah?
There's a fella here wants to see you.
Well, send him over.
Don't forget me. Charlene. Mr.
Kendall.
Kendall.
Yes.
That's Maggie over there. The big fat one at the end of the bar. I'll be around if you want to buy me a drink later on.
All right, Charlene. Thank you.
Max, you can change to the bad whiskey now. Nobody will know the difference. Well, hello, stranger. What can I do for you?
I'm looking for a lodging.
Not a chance. We've been full up for weeks. Ain't you heard about the strike at Gold Run Gulch?
And no, I just arrived. No, this was for a friend of mine. He's outside. You know him, Mr. Chain Kerrigan?
Chain? Well, why didn't you say so? Charlene!
What?
Fix up the good room for a friend of mine and hurry it up.
Maggie almost cried at the sight of Chain cradled in my arms as I carried him up to the room prepared for him. There, lying back on the bed, he lifted a hand feebly toward me.
Oh, Kendall, good lad. Would you be about bringing up me luggage?
Oh, the poor, poor man.
You mean you want all...
Yes, all of them. And don't forget the rations. It's most important, lad. Now go.
Why do you bother the poor ailing man with trivialities now? Bring up his baggage, as he says. There's a back way, and it won't bother no one.
Oh, Margaret, come to me, sigh.
Yes, love. Now, what is it?
Are you sure I'm not imposing on you?
Well, now, what kind of a woman do you take me for?
Oh, Margaret, darling. It's worth the whole trip and trouble and the accident to my leg just to get back and look into your eyes.
Go to sleep, sweetheart. And you can have your friend Kendall right here with you.
Oh, no. I mean... It'll be rather crowded here. I can find a place.
Well, how can it be crowded? Two men in a big room like this?
Well, maybe not. I just hate to...
That's the end of it right now. I'll have another bed set in for you.
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
Look at him, Mr. Kendall. Poor man has fallen asleep. And we stand here, jawing in front of him. Come on, come away.
Oh, before you go, darling... Would you be sending up 4 fingers of your best whiskey for my leg?
Well, of course. I'll have Charlene bring it right away. You can see, Mr. Kendall, nobody understands Chain Kerrigan like I do. I guess he's told you, hasn't he? The reason he's come back to Deadwood is to marry me.
Nobody saw me staggering up the back steps with crate after crate of cats. As for Chain, he busied himself drinking the liquor provided for him and instructed me to release and feed the cats. Eventually it was over and we finally got settled down, in a manner of speaking. But in the morning, the swarm had to be fed all over again. It's quite a job, isn't it?
It is a labor of love, my boy. Did Miss Margaret see you bringing our friends in last evening?
No, she didn't. But what do you plan to do about selling them now, crippled up the way you are?
I have a plan, Kendall, a wee bit of a plan.
Chain love, it's Margaret with your breakfast. Can I come in?
Oh, please do, darling.
Well, did you sleep well?
Oh! What goes on here? Get out! Listen now, Margaret, you've lost control of yourself.
So this is the way you thank me, Chain Kerrigan. Well, you can get out too.
What?
I'll not have this kind of a mess.
Go on, step!
Oh, Margaret, Margaret, come to me side, love.
I'll come to your side. I'll take an axe to you.
But it's my business, love, selling cats. I told you that when I was here before.
Yes, yes, you told me. But I don't expect you to let him a place with them.
Possibly I could help in some manner.
You can, Mr. Kendall. You can open the back door for Shane Kerrigan and his cat.
Have you been told, lass, you're lovelier than ever when you're shouting like that?
Oh, get him out.
Margaret, now would you be allowing $620 to walk out the back way?
I don't care how much money you... What?
How much did you say?
62 cats. Not counting the princess, of course. I could never sell her. She's my breeding stock. 62 cats at $10 apiece. That's $620. Now, Mr. Kendall, a man with that much money could support himself and a loved one for a good long time now, could he not?
Why, yes. I suppose he could, Mr. Kerrigan.
Margaret, sir, have you ever thought of marriage? A woman of your beauty and accomplishments?
Well, as a matter of fact, I... Shane, you're proposing to me, ain't you? I knew that's why you'd come back.
Now, when me leg heals and I'm able to get about and sell the cats, then I can make the plans closest to me heart.
Oh, Shane, I got an idea.
Oh, what is it, beauty?
I'll sell the cats for you.
No, you can't mean it. Now, how would you be doing that?
Why, they'll buy. They'll buy or else.
Who'll buy?
My clientele. I have a certain power here in Deadwood, as you know, Shane, and they'll buy from me.
Well, no. But if it wasn't for my leg, I wouldn't let you do this.
Oh, don't worry about your leg. By tomorrow, you'll have $620, and I'll have the preacher come by in the afternoon. Now, what do you say to that, Shane?
One thing at a time, Margaret. One thing at a time. Now, how would you be going about selling those cats?
That was the last I saw of Shane Kerrigan. I found a room for myself in town, lay on the bed for a moment, and, well, it was the next morning before I awoke. I rushed over to Maggie's place. Above her own sign, there was another one. It said, Cat Sale. Get yours now. On the door of the saloon itself, there was another sign saying, Closed. I knocked, and Charlene, the girl I had first met at Maggie's, came to the door.
Oh, hello, Mr. Kendall. I'm sure glad to see you this morning. But y'all better not come in.
What? Why? What happened?
Oh, come on. Let's walk down the street. It's about Mr. Kerrigan.
Mr. Has he died or something?
Worse. He's left.
Oh, well, then, that's good.
Oh, no, it ain't. He didn't wait for the wedding and say goodbye to Maggie or nothing. Just got his wagon and left.
What about his cats?
She sold them all last night. Gave him over $600. Why, you never seen so many men buying cats in all your life.
How's she taking it?
Oh, all right. Every time she feels bad, she counts her money again.
Her money?
Sure. She sold those cats for $15 apiece. Made over $300 for herself.
What? Why, that's marvelous. Charlene.
What?
You come on with me. I'll buy you that drink I promised you.
Why, Mr. Kendall.
Frontier Gentlemen was produced and directed by Anthony Ellis. Tonight's script was written by Tom Hanley and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Martha Wentworth, Charlotte Lawrence, Joseph Kearns, Barney Phillips, and Harry Bartell. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentlemen. Bud Sewell speaking.
And now stay tuned for the program that has rated tops in popularity for a longer period of time than any other West Coast program in radio history. The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. Signal, the famous Go Farther gasoline, invite you to sit back and enjoy another strange story by The Whistler.
I am The Whistler, and I know many things. For I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
And now for the Signal Oil Company, The Whistler's strange story, The Little Things.
It was night in the small Northern California town. The weak old-fashioned street lamps were almost obscured by the heavy blanket of fog that rolled aimlessly in from the sea. The misty quiet of the town was disturbed only by the muffled arrival and departure of an occasional automobile. Neon signs of the local honky-tonks and bars weakly portrayed their identification and merchandise. Beneath one of these signs stood Johnny Larson. From his pocket, he drew a wrinkled piece of paper, held it nearer the dim light to study the penciled address. Then, striking a match to the dry paper, he watched it burn quickly into meaningless ashes. Yes, from now on, Johnny Larson was going to take good care of all the little things and let the big things take care of themselves. He ground the ashes to a fine powder under one heel, then moved toward the street to hail a cab that he saw emerging from the fog.
Hey, taxi!
Where to, Chief?
For 400 block on Olive Street.
Okay.
You almost slipped, didn't you, Johnny? Almost forgot to take care of a little thing. You caught yourself just in time, or you'd have given the driver the street number you so diligently burned. But now, as you settle back into the seat of the cab, you reflect again on the 5 long years you've just spent behind bars and the little inconsequential things that had put you there. You promise yourself you won't forget again. In a matter of minutes, you're standing in front of a large, outdated frame house. You peer both ways into the fog and listen. No sound of footsteps, no one nearby to see you enter. You walk quickly up the wooden steps. At your knock, the door opens a scant distance, only enough to allow a thin shaft of light to pierce the darkness about you.
Yeah, who is it?
Larson.
Okay. Eddie's upstairs.
Well, look who's here, man of the hour. Come in, Johnny, come in.
Hi, Eddie.
How do you feel after your vacation, Johnny?
Lonely.
Same old Johnny. Everything for laughs, huh? Oh, come here. I want you to meet the boys and the girl. Bernie, Al, meet Johnny Larson. Best in the business.
Hi, Johnny.
Hi.
Laura is Johnny.
Hello, Johnny.
She in this, Eddie?
Up to her pretty neck.
And count me out.
Hey, now, wait a minute, Johnny. I know you did 5 years because of a double-crossing dame.
Sorry, Eddie. Maybe some other time.
There'll be no other time, Johnny. This is it. Okay?
Looks like I'll live longer if I go along, huh? Okay, Eddie, it's a deal.
Oh, good. Hey, Laura, fix us a drink, will you?
Okay.
Bernie, Al, I want to talk to Johnny here alone.
Sure, Eddie. We'll be right downstairs if you need us, boss.
Ah, they're good boys. Always do exactly what I tell them.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
How do you want your drink, Johnny? Straight?
A little water.
I want you and Laura to get along, Johnny. I want everything to run smoothly. We're in this thing together and we'll get out together. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Oh, I'm sure we'll get along. Won't we, Johnny?
Yeah, we'll get along.
Now, look, Johnny, here's a setup. Any day now, the local bank will have over $200,000 in its vault. The cannery payroll.
Wondered why you picked this burg.
That'd be a cinch for you, Johnny. You never worked a sweeter setup. The bank's nothing but a tin can.
This tin can ever been knocked over before?
Yeah, that's the funny part. This payroll business has been going on for years, never a hitch. And I tell you, this vault's as simple as a piggy bank. 1910 equipment all the way through.
Good. When do I case it?
You won't. Not in person, anyway. That's Laura's job. She'll have so many pictures of the inside of that bank, we'll be able to build one of our own just like it. And the pictures will be all yours, Johnny. With them, you can become familiar with the whole layout.
No, those alarm systems are not as easy as you think. Some of the simplest looking and the most dangerous.
Yeah, not this one. Like I told you, it's turn-of-the-century stuff. Any smart high school kid could take it apart. Yeah,
sounds okay. Now, how about the split?
That's my lookout. You'll get your share.
I just thought I'd ask.
Sure, Johnny. Sure. And now I think we better turn in. This thing could break any time. You look like you could use some sleep.
Oh, I could. Had a long trip.
Hey, show him to his room, Laura.
Sure.
I'll see you both in the morning.
Your room is down the hall to the left.
You lead. I'll follow you. Yeah. Looks pretty good to me.
Johnny.
Huh?
Do you know Eddie very well?
Why?
Oh, nothing. Only, wouldn't hurt to keep your eyes open.
Thanks. Won't hurt you to keep your mouth shut.
Okay. Forget
it. I will. Good night.
But you don't forget what Laura said, do you, Johnny? You wonder what she meant, and you intend to find out. You turn off the lights in your room, sit quietly on your bed, until you hear a door slam at the far end of the hall. You quietly open your door, then move quickly, noiselessly down the hall, until you hear Eddie's laughter from one of the rooms. And you inch close to the door and listen.
Don't worry about it, Laura. Give him time.
I don't know, Eddie. I don't like it.
You just be your own sweet self, baby, and you won't have any trouble.
But why him? Why not somebody else?
You like Johnny, huh? Fell from quick, is that it?
Oh, no, that's not it. It's just that I think...
What you think isn't important, Laura. Oh, forget that. I do the thinking on this job, all of it. And it'll go just the way I planned it. On a caper this big, we need a fall guy. And Johnny Larson is made to order. He's our pigeon.
With 1951 model cars beginning to make their appearance, this is the season when a lot of drivers get new car fever. But if a look at your bank book tells you that a new car isn't for you, then why not enjoy the next best thing? And what is the next best thing to a new car? Why, it's your car, powered with Signal Ethyl. You see, this premium grade of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline is engineered to bring out the best in any car of any age. The quickest starting, the smartest pickup, the smoothest ping-free power that sends you smoothly and high up hills that make other cars clatter and shift. And I don't get the idea, of course, that Signal Ethyl's going to let you step away from all new cars. After all, smart new car drivers use Signal Ethyl, too, to bring out all the exciting performance that's built into today's power-packed high-compression motors. But of this you can be sure, the next best thing to a new car is your car, powered with Signal Ethyl gasoline.
Well, Johnny, somewhere along the line, you must have overlooked one of the little things. But you never thought of being the fall guy, did you, Johnny? You know Eddie's right. You are tailor-made for that role. An ex-convict with your reputation could shout his head off about a double cross, and no one would listen. Finally, you go to bed and fall into a restless sleep, certain of only two things: that there will be a fall guy, but it won't be you. Late the next morning, a persistent pounding on the bedroom door awakes you.
Okay. Okay. San Quentin must have made you cautious, Johnny. I should think you want to get away from locked doors.
Habit, I guess, Eddie. What time is it?
11 o'clock.
Well, what's all the noise about?
We're cracking this thing tonight.
Tonight?
Yeah. Cannery payroll was delivered at 8 this morning. First time they ever brought it in on a Saturday.
That's right, it is Saturday. How do you know it was the payroll was delivered this morning?
You underestimate me, Johnny.
Okay. And what about the pictures?
Laura walked in that bank this morning at 10. When she walks out, she'll have more photographs than the family album.
Look, this picture business, it's pretty risky, isn't it?
Not when it's done my way, Johnny. You see, Laura has a small camera fastened inside her purse. A tiny hole in one side of the purse holds the lens. All she has to do is hold her purse in any direction and press the back of it where the cable release is, and she's in business.
Oh.
She opens her purse for a Kleenex and turns the film. Simple. She could take a picture of the bank president himself and get away with it.
You've got it all figured out, haven't you, Eddie?
Always, Johnny. Always.
Yeah. Well, what's the getaway pitch?
Well, we split up in two cars. The boys and I'll take the sedan, you and Laura the coupe. We want to avoid all possible suspicion.
And how about that split?
We'll meet in Las Vegas tomorrow and divide the hall there.
Las Vegas is a long way off. I'd prefer my cut right after the job.
Sorry, Johnny. My plans are made. Besides, you'll have my deposit of good faith, will you?
What do you mean?
Well, Laura, of course. She's worth a million in any man's language.
Well, thanks for the compliment, Eddie. But a million's a little high.
Laura, baby, how'd it go?
Oh, wonderful. No trouble at all. You know, I could have filmed Gone with the Wind in that sleepy little box without being noticed.
Good, good. Now, the sooner you get those developed, the better.
I knew you'd be impatient, Eddie. Look, I'll use the big closet over there for a dark room. Should have the wet prints in about an hour.
Good. I'll be downstairs. Give me a call when you have them finished.
You know, he's like a kid with a new toy when he's on a job.
I guess everybody gets a little nervous.
Boy, when this is over, I'm going to make the most expensive dress shops in Los Angeles think they were hit by a whirlwind.
Los Angeles?
You bet. As soon as I get my share, I'm heading for the best shop.
Might take a little while to get to L.A. from Las Vegas.
Oh. Well, I guess I can't get Los Angeles out of my mind. Ever since I was a kid, I've wanted to put on the dog there.
Sure. Sure, I know how it is.
Yeah. Well, I guess I better get those pictures developed.
Yeah, maybe you better. We can't keep Eddie waiting.
Well, Johnny, Laura's slipped on a little thing, hasn't she? You watch her as she sets up her equipment in the closet. Notice her nervousness. She knows she blundered when she said Los Angeles instead of Las Vegas. But she doesn't know how much. You know she didn't go for the double cross, but you don't know how much she goes for Eddie. She's already warned you to keep your eyes open around Eddie. You decide she's worth a try, and in about an hour, Laura comes out of the closet.
Got some prints for you, Johnny.
Good.
Still a little bit wet.
No, I'll watch it. Yeah.
How are they?
Fine. You did a good job. Real good job.
I'm glad you think so, Johnny.
These shots of the alarm system are perfect. Yeah, I've handled this kind before. Simple.
How about the vault?
Duck soup. Eddie was right. The whole setup is ancient. Looks big and impressive, but the easiest kind in the world to crack.
Eddie said you know what to do with it, all right.
You got more prints?
Oh, yeah, a lot more.
Wonderful setup. Can't get over what an old-style vault this is.
Guess I'll call Eddie and tell him they're ready.
Yeah, wait a minute, Laura. Look, what's with you and Eddie?
Well, what do you mean?
I mean, how many double crosses would you pull for Eddie?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Look, baby, I know all about it. It's all fixed for me to be the sacrifice.
Oh, you're not feeling very well, Johnny. I better call Eddie.
I wouldn't if I were you, Laura. It'd just end up with somebody getting hurt. There'd be no 200 grand, no Eddie, no Laura, and no Johnny. Now, what do you say we be friends?
Well, you gotta believe me, Johnny. I had nothing...
Sure, I know. You don't like that double-cross idea. Eddie knows you don't. I heard you telling him. That's just one more reason we should be friends. Because if Eddie found out I knew, he might get a little worried about you.
You wouldn't tell him that I...
Relax, Laura. We're friends, remember?
What do you want from me?
How does Eddie figure on framing me? Well?
The pictures.
What? These pictures?
Yeah, the ones you're holding in your hands. Your fingerprints are all over them. He was going to leave them in the vault.
Well, what do you know? That's pretty clever. For Eddie?
After the getaway, I was to run out on you in Las Vegas. Eddie knew you'd try to find me, but he also knew the cops would be trying to find you. Well, he was banking on the cops finding you first. He probably would have.
Might have been fun, Laura.
What are you going to do?
Go through with it just as if nothing happened.
Well, how do you expect to get away with
it? I don't know yet, but I'll find out. Call Eddie up here.
What?
You heard. Only when you give him the pictures, you give him the ones I haven't touched. Outside of that, we act as if nothing happened.
Yeah, but suppose he finds out.
He won't.
What about me?
Don't you worry, baby. Johnny will take good care of you. Now go out of the door and call Eddie.
Did they come out okay, Laura?
Johnny thinks so. Don't you, Johnny?
Yeah, just what I need.
Swell. Oh, are those some of the snaps, Laura?
Yeah.
Let's see them.
You watch Eddie as he takes the pictures from Laura. Notice how carefully he holds them. On the edges by his forefinger and thumb, taking care that his fingerprints won't appear on them. You feel Laura's stare burning into you as Eddie speaks.
These are perfect, Laura. A cinch for you, huh, Eddie?
Nothing to it.
Hey, think we can pull the whole job in under 20 minutes?
Won't take me 5 minutes to crack the alarm system in the vault. All depends on how long it takes us to get inside the bank.
Oh, that'll be the easiest part. There's an old ventilating setup at the rear of the bank. Al has walked past it several times. We'll be able to rip it right off the wall. It'll leave a hole large enough for you to get through. After you get inside, you can let us in through the side door.
Now, by the way, how are you going to handle things while we're pulling the job?
Now, we leave the coupe here at the house and pick it up in the getaway. Laura will drive the sedan, stay outside as a lookout. That way, Al, Bernie, and I can work inside the vault. And we'll have 4 suitcases that I hope to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And with the 3 of us working inside, it shouldn't take us more than 10 minutes.
And what about me?
After you open the vault, you keep your eye on the street from inside the bank. And keep your ears open for any signal from Laura.
Sounds okay.
I think that covers it. I'll just take these pictures with me and let the boys get familiar with the layout.
We still gonna split in Vegas?
Yeah, why?
Nothing. Just thought you might change your mind.
You'll get your share in Vegas, Johnny.
Well, I won't get to Las Vegas if I don't get something to eat. How about you, Johnny?
No, not now. Maybe later. I'm going to think about that alarm system a while and then get me a little more sleep. I got a lot of catching up to do.
Yes, Johnny. And you have a lot of thinking to do, too, haven't you? You're pleased with Laura. So far, she's played her part well. But the big obstacle remains in your path. You'll have to get rid of Eddie and his henchmen after the job is over, and you don't know how to do it. After Eddie and Laura leave you alone in your room, you automatically lock the door behind them. Then you study the other set of pictures, but they offer no solution. You pace the floor, thinking, searching your mind, looking about the room as if you'd find a solution there. Finally, your eyes fall on the door. The door you always lock behind you without thinking. And it's an idea, isn't it, Johnny?
Locked doors, that's it.
You hurry back to the pictures, leaf through them quickly, and then you find the one you're looking for, the picture of the vault, and you smile triumphantly as you scrutinize it carefully. Yes, Johnny, the solution to your problem had been right before your eyes all the time. Confident now, the mental strain of the past few hours gone, you suddenly feel very tired. You stretch out in your bed, sleep as if drugged. Many hours later, Laura's insistent voice wakes you.
Johnny, wake up.
Huh? Oh.
It's 4:30 in the morning. Everything's ready.
You don't usually get up this early, especially on a Sunday.
How could you sleep knowing what you know?
Practice, baby. Practice.
Johnny, I've got to know. What are you going to do?
Get myself off the hook.
Yeah, but what about me?
Don't you worry, baby. I'll take care of you. It's a promise.
Okay, Laura. That's the alley up ahead.
Here we go.
Everybody knows his job now.
Yeah.
Sure we know today.
You all set, Johnny?
I'm all set, Eddie.
All right, park a half block down the street, Laura. Keep your eyes open.
Got it.
All right, Al. You get to work on that ventilating system. Bernie, you check the street.
Eddie's men are well trained, aren't they, Johnny? Not a moment lost. In a matter of seconds, you hear the faint sound of metal against stone. You begin to feel uneasy. But you don't have long to think about it. Before you know it, Eddie's voice brings you out of your thoughts.
Okay, easy. Yeah, I got it.
You look up and notice the gaping black hole where the obsolete circular ventilator had been a few minutes before.
All right, Johnny.
You experience that old feeling of excitement as you're lifted up to the ventilator hole and clamber through. Once inside, you spot the alarm system control. Quickly but cautiously, you put the alarm system out of commission. Then you move for the door. Work patiently with the door lock until you feel the lock spring. You swing the door open.
Good work, Johnny.
Get the boys. This won't take long.
You move for the vault. Go to work swiftly and methodically. You work with the combination slowly. And then reaching up, you take hold of the gigantic handles of the door and pull gently. The door hesitates, and then swings open.
Beautiful. Al, Bernie, let's go. Johnny, keep your eyes on the front.
You watch Eddie and his men as they waste no time loading their suitcases from the stacks of currency inside the vault. You see Al close the lid on his suitcase and start towards you.
Oh, here, Al, I'll take that. Go back and help the others.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, Johnny, that suitcase holds enough for you, doesn't it? You watch Al hurry back into the vault, and you notice that Eddie is preparing to leave. His eyes meet yours across the scant 15 feet that separate you. In that moment, you slam the vault door shut and lock it. Then you let yourself out the side door and onto the street. The grayness of the pre-dawn greets you from the east, and you hurry the half block to the sedan and Laura.
Move over. I'll drive.
Johnny, what happened?
We're in, baby. Let's go.
But Eddie, the others...
Snug as rats in a trap, baby. I locked them in the vault.
Vault? But the people at the bank, when they open...
They'll find three very dead guys. That vault won't be open till the bank opens tomorrow morning, more than 24 hours from now. They're finished, baby. They can't live sealed up like that.
Johnny, I'm frightened. I didn't think...
No, but I did. And thinking got me over 50 grand in that suitcase back there and a wide-open highway ahead of me.
How far have we come, Johnny?
Oh, 100 miles or so, I guess. Must have. Sun's up now.
That's strange. We haven't seen any cars. You sure you know where you're going, Johnny?
I've never been so sure, baby. Never been so sure.
Well, what are you stopping for? This is in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I know, baby, I know. It's the end of the line for you, Laura.
Johnny. Johnny, what are you... Oh, Johnny. No. Not again.
I don't need you anymore, baby. But... And I can't trust you. Come on, get out of the car.
But...
Come on, move.
Wait. Wait, Johnny, please. Please, Johnny, you can trust me. I'll do anything.
You double-crossed Eddie for me. You'll double-cross me for somebody else. You're the only one left who can identify me.
But I won't tell anyone, Johnny. I promise.
Sorry, baby.
I promise.
I promised you I'd take care of you. Remember?
Right now, during the rainy season, scientific lubrication is even more important to your car to keep moisture from working into vital moving parts and causing damage. That's why I think you'll be interested in knowing about some of the extras you enjoy when you have your car lubricated at a Signal service station. First of all, Signal dealers take no chances on memory when it comes to the many lubrication points on your car. Instead, they check against Signal's factory recommended lubrication chart, which clearly shows every part. Then they use 9 specialized Signal oils and greases, so each part will get the exact type of protection it needs. And finally, just to make doubly sure not a single part has been overlooked, they check each part again, which is why it's called Signal Double Check Lubrication. Now that's the kind of lube job you want if your car is to give you the long, trouble-free service that was built into it. And that's the kind of lubrication you get from friendly, independent Signal dealers.
Well, Johnny, you've taken care of all the little things, haven't you? Eddie and his boys are finished. And Laura, the only other person who could connect you with the bank robbery, is all through, too, lying dead by the side of the highway where you left her. You're a lone wolf again, Johnny. You and the $50,000 in the suitcase in the back seat. Now, around lunchtime Monday, the events of Sunday many hundred miles behind you, you relax for the first time, realize you're tired and hungry, and you pull up to a roadside restaurant, lock your car, and go inside. The restaurant's almost deserted. Just the waiter and one other man seated on a stool at one end, reading a newspaper.
Hi, stranger.
Hi. Ham and eggs over easy, huh? And coffee.
Sure, right away. Want to see the paper while you're waiting?
No, thanks.
Okay.
Hello, mister.
Hmm? Oh, hello.
Mister, you're under arrest.
What?
I'm sheriff of this county.
What? Okay, but I just got in your county. I couldn't have broken any laws.
You're under arrest for murder, mister.
Now, wait a minute. You got the wrong boy.
No, I don't think so. You murdered a girl back in California sometime early yesterday
morning.
Now,
look, you're crazy. You got me confused with somebody else.
I don't think I have. If there's one thing I'm sure of, you're the guy they're after. I don't know your name. You're the guy, all right. Look at this picture on the front page.
Hey.
You see? It's you, all right.
But how?
It's the darndest thing I ever heard of. The deputies who found the girl's body found a little camera rigged in her purse. She must have taken your picture just as you fired the shot that killed her.
Let that whistle be your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler, each Sunday night at this same time. Signal Oil Company has asked me to remind all of you who play cards. A 12-page booklet giving complete rules for the exciting new 3-deck version of Canasta called Hollywood Canasta is yours for the asking at any Signal station. No purchase required, no obligation. Any Signal dealer will be glad to give you this booklet on Hollywood Canasta free. While his supply lasts. Featured in tonight's story were Bill Foreman, Larry Dobkin, Gigi Pearson, Jack Moyles, Ed Max, and Tony O'Dare. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen, with story by James J. Cullen, music by Wilbur Hatch. It was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is entirely fictional, and all characters portrayed on The Whistler are also fictional. Any similarity of names or resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Remember, at this same time next Sunday, another strange tale by The Whistler. Marvin Miller speaking for the Signal Oil Company. Stay tuned now for Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for this episode of The Relic Radio Show. You can find more from The Whistler, Frontier Gentlemen, past episodes of this podcast, thousands of other old-time radio shows, all at relicradio.com. Find our Shoutcast stream there as well, and anything else we might have going on. And if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, you can donate through the website or visit donate.relicradio.com. Your support makes it all happen. Thanks to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of The Relic Radio Show.